Good evening and welcome, dear friends. It is so good to see each of you present on this screen, that we've come together with our minds and hearts in shared intention for the fullness of human possibility. May it be so for each one of us. So, as we light the Christ candle, we once again affirm the light and the truth that is with us always. And we light it intentionally and place ourselves under the canopy of the work and call upon the conscious circle of humanity to gather with us and to inform us. So we begin in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, God transcendent, God omnipresent and God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. We will begin this evening with an opening reflection of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. He died on April 10th, 1955. And for him, this was Easter Sunday. The following passage was written about him in the preface to his book, Hymn of the Universe. It says, "Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, a figurehead in the unfolding of a new cycle in the life of humankind, moves us profoundly not only by the amazing lucidity of his scientific vision, but also by his love. His immense love of God, which enabled him to see everywhere throughout the created world what the majority of humanity is blind to, the constant presence of the Creator. Pierre Teilhard was far from being a pantheist, but he saw God, the first cause, present everywhere. And filled as he was with reverence for the material world, he lived always in direct awareness of the spiritual. The most convincing proof of what some have called the saintliness of Pierre Teilhard is his humility, and his humility is the pledge of the greatness of his love." The unfolding of a new cycle in the life of humankind. A brilliant scientist himself, seemingly constrained by the confines of his religious order, banished to the then outer reaches of the earth, prohibited from publishing his works, prohibited from accepting prestigious appointments. Nevertheless, he left a legacy that is only now beginning to be plumbed for its depths of riches. But most importantly, as is noted in the preface, he is known by those who knew him for his great love and his great humility. May it be so for each of us. And so now we prepare ourselves for conscious participation, for knowing that what we bring matters and how we come matters. How we participate matters for what it is we are emanating into the group. Is it great love and humility? So now we place ourselves with intention and imminent trust and receptivity to the influences coming from the circle of conscious humanity. And we prepare to receive them with all the consciousness that we are capable. With back upright, heart open, mind quiet, in directed attention, body relaxed, noticing perhaps and then releasing all tension constriction, resistance. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that brought heaviness, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, all affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it and ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God, as we ourselves are beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I open to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. And so now we enter into our time of Lectio Divina. And we share a reading from today's email. It will be read three times with a silent pause after each reading. If there is any encouragement in Christ, any solace in love, any participation in the Spirit, any compassion and mercy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, with the same love, united in heart, thinking but one thing. Do nothing out of selfishness or out of vainglory. Rather, humbly regard others as more important than yourselves, each looking out not for his own interest, but also everyone for those of others. Each expressing an almost infinite sensitivity to all beings, human and otherwise, awake to all the important opportunities that present themselves to us every day. Sensitivity of presence, fully there, without any agendas. This sensitive presence is able to respond through deep listening with the heart to both what is said and what is left unspoken. There is no greater gift than to be in the presence of such ones, the bearers of grace. May it be soon that it is so for each of us. If there is any encouragement in Christ, any solace in love, any participation in the Spirit, any compassion and mercy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, with the same love, united in heart, thinking but one thing. Do nothing out of selfishness or out of vainglory. Rather, humbly regard others as more important than yourselves, each looking out not for his own interest, but also everyone for those of others. Each expressing an almost infinite sensitivity to all beings, human and otherwise, awake to all the important opportunities that present themselves to us every day. Sensitivity of presence, fully there without any agendas. This sensitive presence is able to respond through deep listening with the heart to both what is said and what is left unspoken. There is no greater gift than to be in the presence of such ones, the bearers of grace. May it be soon that it is so for each of us. If there is any encouragement in Christ, any solace in love, any participation in the Spirit, any compassion and mercy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, with the same love, united in heart, thinking but one thing. Do nothing out of selfishness or out of vainglory. Rather, humbly regard others as more important than yourselves, each looking out not for his own interest, but also everyone for those of others. Each expressing an almost infinite sensitivity to all beings, human and otherwise. Awake to all the important opportunities that present themselves to us every day. Sensitivity of presence, fully there, without any agendas. This sensitive presence is able to respond through deep listening with the heart to both what is said and what is left unspoken. There is no greater gift than to be in the presence of such ones, the bearers of grace. May it be soon that it is so for each of us. And so it is. You're invited to share with us what you received from this reading, or perhaps from gazing upon the image. Melba, good evening and welcome.
This was such a beautiful and synchronicity moment for me, because as you were reading, I kind of got emotional because all I could think of was our community. I thought about the board meeting and that last part about there's nothing greater than to be in the presence of those that are, that have the grace of presence and sensitivity. If it felt like the words were reading my mind, you know, reading my mind on Sunday, and since Sunday, actually, after was the service was so exquisite and meaningful and moving, but the meeting was extraordinary in the way that the being of the community was such elevated intelligence, consciousness, that I really was in awe. And I was impressed, but I was also in awe because the board kind of generally, you know, people think of the business of an organization of the board. The way the business was conducted and the way that I could see a restraint in each of the board members, an openness, a responsibility for service was so tender. And that's what this reading reiterated for me. I feel really lucky and grateful to every being that has chosen to follow the work and to reach higher.
Thank you, Melba. That includes you. Thank you.
I'm grateful.
Yes, I'm grateful for you.
Thank you.
So, Steve, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne and everyone. Pondering this passage and also thinking about the homework from Michael's presentation last week about the 12 stages of humility, and I'm also doing some required reading called Servant Leadership. And I, when I was doing my master's program in healthcare, I had to take this test about my leadership style. And like most physicians, the two styles that I leaned on the most were directive and pace setter. Pace setter is set a pace no one can keep up with. And directive is what it sounds like. There's nothing there that's servant leadership. There's no aspect of servant leadership about it. And in some ways, it's sort of necessary in crisis situations like CODES. But I've also done ACLS courses where in CODES you have to kind of yield to who's present and coordinate all that and externally consider more. So but over time, I've found that style softening, and it doesn't work now in retirement when you're part of community organizations like Emily Ann. You have to yield more to folks. That directive pace setter style doesn't work. And I've been humbled by that. And I realize that there's a lot of work I still need to do on those 12 stages of humility when I really even look at archaic attitudes I still hold. So I'll just share that with y'all.
Wow. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Marcia, good evening.
Hi, everybody. I had a marvelous experience on that last reading. The first reading, my cat had jumped on me and I was quite distracted, and then I got into it. But on the third reading, I had been following the words online, and all of a sudden the image lighted up, literally. And I saw those two men who just were emanating, and I know they did, every word of that paragraph. And what I had was a huge wish that I could have been there at that moment. And then I flashed to, I know some of you have met both of them. And I followed Father Keating for many, many, many years. And anyway, that's just my experience during the reading. So
thank you, Marcia. Thank you. And Jack. Is it Jack or Jackie tonight?
Yes. All right. Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Good evening, Jackie.
This was a very powerful passage for me today in particular. In my work, little W work that I do, I am involved in mediations in a regulatory agency, a licensing agency. And I had the opportunity today to be mediating with a individual at what would be considered the lowest level of licensure in the work that I do. And we very often give little weight to people at that stature. But this is a person who this passage spoke about. There is no greater gift than to be in the presence of ones that are the bearers of presence. And so to have sensitivity to all beings and able to respond with deep listening and to hear what is said and what is unspoken. So this person in his being was of such a high nature that I know that not just I, but the others involved in this heard him in a way and at a depth that we normally would not hear because of his quality of being, his presence, his intelligence, everything, his goodness, really his goodness, that we were able to really understand and hear him. And the outcome was what you would expect from that, an unusual understanding and rapport with him and acceptance of conduct that probably would not normally be acceptable. So it was an honor for me to be there. And there are many days I come home thinking, why am I doing this work? This is not helping me and I'm not helping anyone. And why has God put me here? But today was the day, or one of the days, in the midst of much happening in my own life that is surprising and wonderful for me to recognize that I am around beings of this quality, and I don't always hear what they have to say to me. Mm-hmm. And these are angels, and I am grateful.
Wow, what a gift. Thank you for sharing this with us, Jackie. Thank you. Brady, good evening.
Good evening. The impression that came across for me with the passage was as if I was listening to a sermon by Meister Eckhart. The same flavor, the same nuanced punch. What do you call it? Shocks in some way, softly given. Thank you.
You're welcome, Grady. May it be so. And Sue or Rusty?
It's Sue right now. I was briefly read the email this morning and was connected with the topic of external considering. It's a very useful subject and practice for me right now in my life. And I enjoyed the reading, but I was really struck by the image of Father Keating and the Dalai Lama. And I have been fortunate enough to be, you know, in Father Keating's presence on a number of occasions. And I know the presence, I can remember the presence that he carried. I've never met the Dalai Lama, but I was fortunate enough to meet his brother, and who came to our church one time, and I had a very brief conversation with him. And I just remember the quality of his attention was remarkable just in those couple of minutes that I was talking to him. It felt to me like when he was talking to me, there was nothing else in his awareness, just our conversation. And it felt so amazing to be talking to someone whose mind was not, you know, partly occupied with something else or thinking their own thoughts or whatever. I mean, it was really remarkable. And so looking at that image just brought back that memory of that, what it was like to be on the receiving end of that, that awareness and that consciousness, and made me want to reach a little bit higher.
Wonderful. Amen. Thank you, Sue. Thank you. Margaret, we'll close this part of the evening with your sharing.
Thank you, Marianne. I really love the image, and the image was speaking to me about the to know which is unspoken. And I feel like when Father Keating was accepting the gift, whatever it was, from Dalai Lama, that it was going back to the passage that Jesus says, it's better to give than to receive. And you could see the joy on the Dalai Lama's face from the giving. And then you could also see him externally considering the humbleness and the kindness and the respect from Father Keating as he bowed his head so gently. It was just beautiful. I can still see it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you. It is beautiful. So now it is my joy to again welcome Michael Begeman among us. And Michael is going to speak to us and accompany us in the journey of humility and regard. Welcome again, Michael.
Thank you. This is the time in our class where we customarily will share on what reflections we have from the previous week's class. How did it land in us? How did it impact our work or our lives? So we'll open the floor for sharing about that in a few minutes. Just to get our head back in the game from last week, we'll make a fast track over the hike that we took together. So the topic was the practice of becoming passive to oneself. And we actually started by reflection on the previous week's class and introducing a perhaps an upgraded model to the purgation, illumination, and unitive process that provided us with an upgraded model where Christ is with us through everything in our journey at all times. Then we took a deep dive into the practice of becoming passive to oneself, where practice is something that's intentional and ongoing, where being passive is non-reactive or non-impulsive, and the aspect of oneself to which we are becoming passive is our thoughts and feelings and desires and aversions and so on, the things that spontaneously and automatically arise in us or get stimulated in us. We spent the bulk of last week doing a review and a dive into these 12 practices of humility and to what each of these looks like. And the homework was centered around these 12, inviting you to take on one or two or 12 of them and to see what was revealed in your life by engaging with one or more of these practices. You were also invited to be a servant of God during the week. And what is your experience? Wow. And to discuss all of this, if you're part of a journey group or have a work partner, to talk about these things with them. So there we have it. What has your experience been? Hey, Jack.
Hey, friend.
Hey.
So I chose the first one, and my experience included one, the eclipse, which we sat in the backyard and had a perfect view of the totality. That plus IRS plus a moment when one of our little puppies, was having a stroke and was just flailing about, banging his head on the floor. So to have the moment of the absolute sacredness of the eclipse juxtaposed to the reality of what the heck I owe government, which there's a sacredness to that. It's got to be, or it's not part of the creation. And then the sacredness of what most likely was a future memory of a puppy I had years ago that had the same things going on. I was rushing the dog to a vet. On the way, realized that they had been chewing on a piece of plastic lodged between their jaws, and they couldn't close their mouth. And that's what was going on with this knucklehead down here. And there was a sacredness of that I was able to just give up tension, give up anxiety and all this in a moment of recognizing these are just things that are happening. And there are so many other things, but those are the three that stand out. And to have them to have the eclipse remind me of sacredness. The teachings of the word that goes into cosmology was so revealed there that, and it was a blessing to recognize that we do think and teach and study cosmology. And that's seems like one of the few places where this can happen. And there's a sacredness to our church and to our friendship.
Thank you. Yeah, what a great example of scale, right? So there's something happening cosmically at the cosmic level. There's something happening at the economic level. There's something that's happening at the puppy level. And all of them are hitting our three centers at the same time and in different ways. And what lights up? What lights up? Thanks. Good evening, Gay.
Good evening, Michael. Thank you. In the email, there was a, I guess I would call it a metaphor of water seeking the lowest level.
Yep.
That just really struck me because I had never thought of that in that particular way. So these metaphors for me are, these visual metaphors are so much more important sometimes than words. And one metaphor I've always held, and it's just been, become kind of a mantra for me, is the feeling, the internal feeling of reaching, like this yearning for God, feels to me like a reaching upward. And at the same time, I envision, if you will, God reaching down for me. So there's this attraction of up for me and coming down for God. And this simply turned everything around. And I see how the one that I've held so long is not wrong. And yet at the same time, this water seeking the lowest level, I can put that on my bones. I can feel that. I can remember that. I can especially remember that when the personality wants to get irritated, upset, feeling like it knows right and the other guy is simply not right. So that was a very important piece for me, and I'm going to hold it. Thank you.
That's beautiful. And that passage about water seeking the lowest place is from a book called Christ the Eternal Tao, which we read years ago, or I got years ago. And it's so beautiful. It is written by an Orthodox monk who took the Tao Te Ching and basically reinterpreted it with Christ as the Tao. And the thing about the Tao is that it is this quiet, humble, encompassing, low, receiving thing. Most humble.
Yes.
The other, something else that you reminded me of, which I failed to say last week, and it's when we were looking at that diagram of the double helix, and we had the self-emptying in one direction and the unification or unity go in the other. One of the things that inspired that in me was from the book Meditations on the Tarot. Mm-hmm. And some of you have probably run across this book. I think that Mimi is our resident expert in that book and has led some groups discussing it. The thing that I remember very little of the book, but I remember that Arcanum 5, which is called the Pope, it struck me when I read this that the Pope is sitting, or this character is sitting there with two, in a chair, with the two kind of pillars of the back of the chair coming up on either side of him. One is red, the other is blue. So kind of like that double helix that we saw last week. And in the teaching from Meditations on the Tarot, the inspiration that the author had when looking at that image was something that he called divine respiration. Mm-hmm. Divine respiration. and that one of these pillars behind him represented prayer, what he was able to lift. And the other represented benediction, which was that, the return. And there was this divine respiratory process of prayer and benediction, or prayer and receiving blessing and becoming blessed as we engage in our own process. And so yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Thank you. Karen.
Good evening.
Hi.
Michael, I just wanted to thank you for coming back to this, that the 12 humility. That presentation really struck me very, very strongly. And this past week, I've just really focused on number one, about the sacredness of every moment. That speaks to me a lot more than, of course, I've heard of, be in the present moment, but that is not as heart rendering as the sacredness of every moment. I just love that. And that's something I can really see that when I'm speaking to somebody. It's just, that has really been impactful for me. And I think hand in hand, and maybe I've just been having trouble with it lately, cultivate a passive mind or a quiet mind. And of course we do that with centering prayer, but I trying to do it in just in everyday life. And but those two things, those are my big helps. And so thank you for bringing that up again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I very much wanted to bring them back because I think that they are such a powerful tool for our own engagement and transformation. The author did such a beautiful job of taking the, in the Rule of Benedict itself, there are the 12, what he calls the 12 stages of humility. But as originally written, they're very much for a monastic audience. And it's very much about the relationship between them and the rule of the monastery and the elders of the monastery and each other. So the author of this book that we took the 12 from did such a beautiful job of being inspired by those 12 and creating these practices of humility that are absolutely accessible and applicable and appropriate to us sitting here in the world that we live in. So I feel a great debt of gratitude to him for what he brought to us, and I'm glad that you're working with these. After church on Sunday, I bumped into somebody. We were walking out together. They said, "Oh, I'm planning on, doing one of these a week. This is my, I think that this is a really great practice." And she said, "There's one that I really am excited about and want to work on." And I said, "That's fantastic. And what you might also want to do is to find the one that you don't want to work with." Because there's undoubtedly some transformational food there. But anyway, they're not stages, they're just practices. So yeah, keep after them. Yeah, thanks. Hi, Marilea. You can do it. You did it.
Really? Great.
Yeah, really.
Just as I put my hand up, Britt said that our internet is unstable. And so...
Well, aren't we all?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to take credit for it, but perhaps we ought to blame the internet. I want to talk about number seven, but before I do that, I want to also say that that image of the Dalai Lama and of Father Keating, that's two saints right there, just two saints. And I was put in mind of what you said last week during class, that we don't have to go back to the Middle Ages to run into saints. That in our church, we are in the presence of many saints. And I think one of the things that I've experienced with the saints among us is that deep listening. And I'd like to emulate that. So for those of you who have shown me that path to sainthood, I'd really like to follow you. So may it be so. But number seven is small. Remember your smallness and your impermanence. And that one came to meet me during the eclipse. That we were in our front yard and the cloud was occluding much of the sun. We couldn't see it very often. But every time the cloud would part, Britt and I were like little kids on Christmas, at the sun, we'd shout at each other and quickly lie down on our yoga mats and look up with our glasses. It was just a moment of childlikeness, being delighted that the sun was peeking out and being so small and looking up at it. It was just a sense of reverence and wonder and glee. It was delightful. And then at the moment when the totality was approaching, Britt had in mind that we would be able to see the shadow of the moon, the shadow racing towards us at 1500 kilometers or 1000 miles an hour toward us. And so we positioned ourselves in our yard at a high spot. And we stood there side by side, shoulder to shoulder, and our arms went around each other's waist. And we stood there in silent wonder and watched our world darkening and getting more and more still. And it was sacred, it was holy. Everything seemed to just kind of slow down and get very quiet and dark. And what came to me was memento mori. I was put in mind of my death, that this darkness was approaching and I was standing there with absolute reverence and awe and waiting for it and being delighted and being in the presence of my beloved. And it was a very delicious feeling, thinking that this could be a way that I could face my death. So it was absolutely lovely. And so grateful to have the practices that would lead me into my yard to be a child and to be full of glee, and then the serenity to stand and just observe and be with that energy. It was just a blessing. And I probably won't ever see another one, but who knows? I wonder.
Right. Yeah, who knows? We were discussing the event after the event, and the effect that it had on people who were around us. We were in a field not far from here. And we were, one of the reflections that we had is that it is, you're thinking about it on a big scale, the national scale of, you know, millions of people coming to Texas and other places to see this. And originally thinking, well, you know, it's just any, you know, it's like Disneyland, right? It's an event. It's something that people want to go and, you know, tick off. But we were thinking that it has taken tragedies in the past to bring masses of people together in a very unusual way. Tragedies like 9/11, for example, where all of a sudden there was a shock that brought large pieces of humanity or of the American people, you know, together in a way that where their consciousness was transformed. And we were thinking, well, this was actually one of those, but it didn't take a tragedy to do it. It was this cosmic event that so many people purposefully put themselves under, subjected themselves to. And we have no idea what little tweak to the consciousness of millions of people occurred on April the 8th, but I'm hopeful. Jill or Jeff?
In the Lectio passage, I heard awake to all the possibilities that present themselves and a sensitivity to the presence. And I'm still plumbing the depths of this opportunity that presented itself. And I mentioned it in a couple of groups, but it was on the land, coming in contact with this little being that was a baby owl that was on the ground. And I had been pondering the tuning into the sacredness of each moment. And it really hit on like six of these practices, being attentive to the sacred nature of the moment, learning to distrust and question our own will. I felt like it was so much work to just allow it to be what it was and to bear the possibilities and to know that it wasn't mine to fix or to change, and to trust nature and to witness that this little creature was not, it didn't seem to have any fear. It just was being, it was just, and all the drama was in my mind and the creation of stories, and that it was other than it should be. And then cultivating a patient and quiet mind. The owl seemed to have that. And for me, there was so much movement, and I just got to hold both sides, bear it, let go, walk away, accept the limitations of power and control. It wasn't mine to do anything with except to be in the mystery. And it struck me that it was a bearer of grace, and that it just, there was so much in it. And then finding contentment in all our circumstances, it just triggered in me how this one wants to react so many times in any other way than contentment and feel like it needs to do something. And so it was beautiful for 3 days to sit in this with this little creature, and really not to know what happened to it, but to believe that it was all perfect. And that's what life is, the impermanence of it all. It just, everything tied into this one little moment. And I've been plumbing it for, besides those 3 days, for 3 days after it, and still appreciating the beauty that I got to witness. And so appreciated the gift of all these practices.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's such an example of how we see, or how we can see. So you apprehended something in a very unique way, and it opened up all kinds of mystery and learning, and I mean everything that you just suggested or reported on, that all came from your quality of being presence there. So it's wonderful. And you take 10 other people and put them in the same circumstance, and different things would have happened, right? Different.
And there was something in its presence that drew that to the calmness and the beauty. There was, it was like a reflection of it, you know, just drawing that.
Yeah. Forward. Well, it's deep called unto your deep.
Yeah. Right.
And your deep was there to hear and respond to it. Yeah, so thank you. All right. So let's figure out what regard is. Right? What is this? What is this thing called regard? So I started off by taking a look through scripture and through the commentaries and scanning PDFs of fourth way books that I have and all of that to see, well, what is said about regard? And the answer is, from those sources, almost nothing, actually. So this is one of those, oh, it's going to be a creative moment. So here we go. And if you don't like my creativity in this, it can be your creative moment. So there's no right answer here. So what is regard, or how is this thing used? Well, the phrase or the word is used in a lot of different circumstances. Many have a high regard for the abbess as quite wise and learned. So regard as a word of esteem, as a symbol of esteem. Or the abbess always regards my talks with some trepidation. Understandably, of course. I look at the stray dog with some regard, right? So almost the opposite. Austin is regarded by many as a wonderful place to live. So thought of. It's just thought of. And I sign off many of my emails with best regards, which is, you know, best wishes, well-wishing to somebody. And none of this was hitting it for me. And I finally found a definition in the Collier's dictionary, using regard as a noun as opposed to a verb or an adverb in those other senses. And it said, if you have regard for someone or something, you respect and you care about them or it. So this is the definition of regard that I've latched onto for this evening, that it is going to be some attitude of respect and care that we manifest toward something. So somebody this evening has already mentioned, it was Sue, already mentioned external considering, and that was the easy one. So as I was thinking about where does regard hit us in our spiritual journey? The easy thing to come to, and we'll talk about this a little bit in the second movement of four, is external considering. It's an attitude of respect and care for others. But I was interested in unpacking this as broadly as I could imagine to see where this could lead us. So our exploration tonight is looking at regard of oneself, regard of others, regard of the earth, and regard of God. So we have a whole scale of potentiality here, ranging outward from ourselves to the furthest edges of something. So four movements here. The first is regard of oneself. Now, this is the trickiest of the four, because the question that comes up for me is, well, what self is being regarded? And if you sit and read through the five volumes of the commentaries, much of it is about making the self passive, which is the subject last week. And there's actually a prerequisite, I would say, to regard of oneself, which is becoming passive to oneself. Otherwise, what we're stuck with, and there are many, probably the preponderance of people on planet Earth, if they have regard for themselves, it's an egoic regard. They have a high regard for themselves because they, and then, you know, fill in the blank, you know, because of their job, their position, their money, their children, their, you know, their accolades, their power, whatever it is. Many people regard themselves for that. And of course, all of those things that I just mentioned are the things that we become passive to in the work, that we surrender, that we abandon, that we let go of. And when those things have been let go of, well, what is left? That is, if there was some bit of self that I was going to be demonstrating care and respect for, what would it be? And as I was thinking about this, the answer, this is more of that other stuff, right? So the work gives us the twin giants of pride and vanity, self-esteem, There's egocentricity, the self-referential self versus humility that we were talking about last week. So all that stuff that I just said. This is what regard of self tonight is not about. Nichols says the less you identify with yourself, the more you will become passive to yourself. So as we let go of our reflecting on the things that are we consider to be part of our presentation to the world, the more we become passive. So I think the key to what it is that what regard of oneself can mean in this circumstance is given to us by Father Keating. At the end of Open Mind, Open Heart, he had the guidelines for Christian growth that something in transformation. Christian, well, anyway, it's the first appendix of Open Mind, Open Heart. The first guideline in there says our basic core of goodness, so that thing, the basic core of goodness is capable of unlimited development, indeed, of becoming transformed into Christ and deified. So when I think about what it is that regard of oneself can refer to, it's this. It is that basic core of goodness. It is the divine indwelling. It is the fact that Christ is in all creation, including in me and in you. Now that gets covered over by all of the stuff that we're so familiar with from studying the work, but there is still this thing within, this divine holy thing within, and our work, the reason that we're in the journey school, the reason that 133 of us are on this call tonight, is because we have a valuation of something that is deep and real and eternal and holy and good within each of us. And we're willing to give ourselves to the nurturance and growth of that. And that giving of ourselves is regard. That is the respect and the regard and the care for ourselves at the deepest level. There is a gentleman which I expect we're going to get to know more over the coming years, Joseph Azizi. I was unfamiliar with him until recently. He is a Maronite Catholic priest, and he is also deep into the Fourth Way. So that's an interesting combination. It's a rare combination right there. We quoted him in the email today. In a paper that he wrote called First Reflection on Self-Love. And that's his website there, josephazizi.com. Many very, very interesting, thoughtful articles in there. And he says the road from false to genuine self-love, is connected with becoming impartial to oneself. So that's what we were talking about last week. But he was referring to this thing called genuine self-love, as opposed to just the love of self that we try to become passive to. Great, we'll stop here. Christina. Christina.
I'm very sorry that I was trying to see the picture more clearly. I apologize.
You butt dialed.
Yes, I'm very sorry.
Okay, nice talking to you.
Thank you.
No problem. If anybody else has comments as we go along, we can take them as we go along. All right. So the second movement in regard is the practice of regard for others. So this is what I call the common regard. This is, Greta, we'll take it.
Yes, good evening. I was thinking that the attitude of respect and care is very good for external consideration, but also when one holds another in regard like that, and also oneself, myself, it requires a lot of compassion. And to do that, we have to, in the case of self-love, be able to do self-observation and become a witness for our actions. And in the case of other people, to feel compassion, we need to think of them as ourselves.
And understand, see their humanity, understand that they're under the same laws that we are, that they are the way that they are, not because, usually because they want to be, but because of circumstance. So yeah, that is a key to divine mercy. And that leads us to being one of those bearers of grace that was in the first reading that Marianne gave us this evening. Mm. Being a bearer of grace to one another. And that's not something that we have to spend the next 10 years getting to. We can be bearers of grace to somebody tomorrow. So. Thank you, Greta.
Thank you.
Regard of others. So this is, so again, this presupposes impartiality or passivity to oneself. As long as this thing called, you know, that I call I, myself, the egoic one is what is active, then it's impossible for me to see others as they are. All I see is my own thoughts and judgments and reactions and reflections about them. But when we are able to become impartial or passive to those reactions, as Joseph Azizi said, that allows us to have a quality of presence to others, similarly to the way that Jill had a quality of presence to an owl this week. So the practice of external considering, for all of you friends in the work of many years, you know what we're talking about here. Probably a third of the five volumes of the commentaries in one way or another are talking about external considering. We cannot do a deep dive into that tonight. But from In Search of the Miraculous, just to give it a little bit of context if you are newer, In Search of the Miraculous says that external considering is adaptation towards people, to their understanding, to their requirements. That is, it is us trying to understand the needs of others and relate to them out of that understanding. And from the work life, Beryl Pogson said, it is a question of seeing a person objectively without bringing yourself into it. We'll come to you in a second, Virginia. So there are practices that embody external considering, and it's things like compassion and forgiveness, love of neighbor, seva, as in selfless service. I know that in our own, at the Church of Conscious Harmony, there's a contemplative response team trained in selfless service, which is when we go to serve somebody, we're not coming in with our own ideas about what people need and how we're going to help them. It is a much more quiet, respectful, listening presence that we come in with. And sometimes what needs to be done is nothing besides simply being with another. Not the doing kind of service that we're all so familiar with. To have regard for another simply as they are is a rare thing indeed. Practices such as external considering and forgiveness require a keen inner eye be maintained as much as awareness of the other. So this is this attentiveness to our own passivity or to our own transparency, while also being attentive to the needs of another. It's an interesting way of being. Maurice Nicol in the commentaries says, in real external considering, you must become passive to the reactions of your personality. Virginia.
Okay, am I unmuted? Years ago, I read in the commentaries that the definition of violence is not what we think. It's to not see the multiplicity in another. That is violence in the work.
Right, to hold another as if they have one single unchanging eye, that what we see is them.
Yes, and on certain days, maybe for myself, using the same language.
Right. Ashley.
Hi, I just had to share this. A friend of mine was telling me that she was watching or listening to a Buddhist teaching from Tara Brach, and someone in the and they were talking about the practice of kenosis, their version of that. And someone in the audience raised their hand and said, I know I'm nothing, but I'm all I think about. I just thought that was apropos for some of what we're, you know, it's just so easy to get into that. Anyway, I thought that was funny.
It is funny, and it's also true. Sure. That's what last week's was all about. So, okay. Yeah. Hail humility. The third degree of regard that I mapped out in thinking about this is regard of the earth. So again, regard as an expression of respect and care. And we all just read had the community reading of one of Jacob Needleman's books, which was all about this. And it was all about not only regard for the earth, but what our relationship is to that. So I look at this in the context of Father Keating's and Ken Wilber's model of the evolution of consciousness. And there is a hierarchy that humanity has gone through over the millennia, which started off for millions of years about the only consciousness that we had was what's good for me. It was a survival level of consciousness. And then not that long ago, humans formed together in terms of groups and tribes and societies. And this level of consciousness called mythic membership was got kicked off then. And what's good became what's good for my group. And what Father Keating and Ken Wilber have been part of their teaching is that humanity is poised on the edge of the next level of the evolution of consciousness. And that is stepping into consciousness of what's good for the many, i.e. the greater good. They call it the intuitive level of consciousness or unity consciousness. So we see this cropping up. We see individuals and groups who are dedicated to, in our society, the good of the many, the greater good. We also see that what seems to have the stronghold is the good of the group, which might be a race, or it might be a religion, or it might be a country. That's what forms the hard boundaries of power and opposition and divisiveness nowadays. But as we go step into the world of the greater good, then as we conceive of the earth, or as we relate to the earth, which is probably, so there's my language, thinking about something that is inanimate, or am I in relationship with something that is living? That is a shift in consciousness and relationship to the earth. Here we develop the sense of unity and oneness with all creation. And we become concerned with things that may be political or social or material and ecological, which is good. So all of these are good things, provided that we have done our work first. So when we are coming to our expression of concern for the earth, or our expression of concern for the greater good, when we were coming to that from basically a cleaned out place, that place of inner emptiness. And that's why kenosis is such an important prerequisite. This presupposes the impartiality or passivity to oneself. Then we can engage in these things for the greater good. There are different kinds of volunteer work that I enjoy doing. And one of the things that I pay attention to is, how do I feel at the end of the day? If I have gone off and I have given myself to some group or some organization or to some cause, and if at the end of the day I feel joyful and I feel like this was good, this was a good use of this being for the day, then yes. If I end the day feeling drained or divisive or angry about the way things are, that shows me that I have work to do on myself, and that I'm actually not helping the situation. So there's this regard of the earth for Matthew. Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. This is seeing things from a very high level of consciousness, this saying of Jesus, that we are one. And that as we, whatever the interactions are that we have with one, it impacts the whole. And it can be the whole of humanity. It can be the whole of the earth. So a quote from Needleman from An Unknown World. We can hardly imagine what the earth will offer us in return for its being seen and understood by the whole being of man. Earth and nature need this from us more than anything else. So the premise of the book is that the earth is actually alive and growing, as are the other planets. And for those of you who have studied the cosmology of the work, this is the whole business about the side octave and how, and our place in the side octave, and how that helps with the evolution of the great octave. If you haven't studied that, that's fine. we can let that go. But the point is that the work that we do on ourselves has an impact not only personally, but also to all of humanity. It's raising the work that the personal work that we do raises the level of consciousness for the entire species, and it is also doing something for the earth itself. And this is how he ends the book. And only from this inner transformation of the mind can right action toward nature and the earth be pursued without ultimately resulting in the same old story. that is division, conflict, and violence. So this work of, that we do of inner transformation is an immense work of regard, right? That regard, that respect and care toward nature, toward others, and toward the earth. The last step on our journey is regard of God. Now, this is tough. There is part of me that, because of how I was raised, that when I hear God, when I think of God, the first thing that comes is still the God out there. The one way out there, beyond the eclipse. So the first thing that I was thinking of was, well, what is regard for that? I think that's impossible to say. But when we take other revelations of God that come to us through the Trinity, that is the divine indwelling, God within me. I mean, we start our class with talking about God transcendent, God immanent, and God omnipresent. So God omnipresent is the God in all of creation, all of material creation. It's what Teilhard de Chardin was talking about in the quote that Marianne read when we opened up tonight, that all of creation has been deified. God is present in it. And God is present in each of us. So there is a way of reverencing one another and a way of reverencing creation, which is this divine regard. That is, this is a, for me, this is the way that I can get my hands on this thing called God. And by reverencing this creation, I am reverencing the God within this creation, no matter what it looks like. Maybe by that, it's having some, there is also this reverence for the transcendent God. I don't know. That's a, it's a, it's new thinking. Or it's just early stage thinking for me at this point. Pamela and I hike all the time. We were, last November, we were hiking in Georgia, and I captured a little photo of her. You could say that she's a tree hugger, and she is. But it's more than that. That there is a walking through the woods and feeling and reverencing the divine in these things that were alive years and years, decades and decades before us, and will be alive decades and decades after us. And it helps from a scale standpoint to keep me in the right place. So today's email was finished off by sections from Wayne Teasdale's book, The Mystic Heart, on sensitivity, selflessness, and acceptance. And a quote that I appreciated from that section is that the preeminent form of mystic or contemplative character is the saint who has achieved some perfection in his or her capacity to love and to care for others. We all know the names of various saints throughout history. What all these people have in common is their surrender to something beyond themselves. Which brings us back to kenosis, abandonment, emptying, humility, surrender, letting go, acceptance. All of these words that we've been focusing on for the last, you know, two weeks or so, or maybe the last 10 years or so, that these are the things that that build the saints of today. And that's what we're called to. So, Jan.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello. I was so struck by the prayer in the end of the email today that said, "My Lord and my God, take from me everything that distances me from you." And I thought of the idea of state and place and this whole idea of closeness and distance. And then the next line was, "My Lord and my God, give me everything that brings me closer to you." And I thought of the work tools and contemplative prayer and the welcoming prayer. And it ended with, "My Lord and my God, detach me from myself so that I could give my all to you." And I thought about giving back to God all that is on loan to me as this life on this planet. And I ended up reading this little thing in this devotional I use, and it was a quote from A.W. Tozer, and it said, "For each of us, the time is surely coming when we shall have nothing but God." And I paused and thought of that, and I realized there were eyes in me that were afraid to think of nothing but God, eyes of me that were sad, because there would be things to grieve in leaving this world. But also there were eyes in me that were excited and joyful by that prospect of the time coming when there's nothing but God. And so I guess the idea of acknowledging and recognizing the sad and fearful parts of me had to happen before I could move on to putting those aside and watching that empty space fill with joy and excitement and a celebratory release, like I wanted to dance. And so it's a process. And even in that short time this morning, it just seemed like a whole cycle went through. But I wanted to share that with you because I thought the pairing of that little prayer from Nicholas of someplace I've never heard of and Tozer just sort of blew it up for me. So
yes. Yeah. It's an incredibly powerful prayer. And I mean, you did a beautiful job of using it to see, oh, where does my resistance to each of these statements come up? It's in there. It's in there. So there's some, I mean, in it, and there are layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of the things that want to hang on a little bit. It's like, there's, you know, what do I not want to abandon to be fully God? So great work. That was great work. We need to turn it back over to Marianne. So Greta. Thank you.
We need to turn it back over to God, I think, you know, with our closing prayers. Not that we've been very far away. Yeah, indeed. We have been there. God has been there. So we join in praying together that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. And may it be so. Good night.